You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
International Desk
are go.
International relations experts are fearing a major conflict between India and Pakistan after sharp escalating tensions following a deadly terrorist attack in militarized Kashmir that killed 26 people. 31 are dead and 46 are injured as a result of Indian strikes on Pakistan and Pakistan-administered Kashmir as India claims it struck terrorist infrastructure sites. Kashmiris have a long history of oppression in modern times. This has been as India and Pakistan fight over the region while Kashmiris fight for independence. Human rights reports on Kashmir reveal examples of forced displacement, sexual violence, disappearances, and allegations of torture and death in custody. As described by Meenakshi Ganguly for Human Rights Watch, India and Pakistan blame each other for human rights violations while ignoring their own responsibility for abuses. I spoke to Rohan Davis about the recent terrorist attack and ongoing military escalation, as well as the historical and political context of the Kashmir crisis. Davis is a video essayist on YouTube from Kerala, India, who covers Indian history and politics. Here is that interview. I want to start by asking about what happened a few weeks ago. Who was attacked in Kashmir and who has taken responsibility for this?
A few weeks ago, on the 22nd, 26 innocent civilians, all men, were killed by a group calling themselves the TRF, or the Resistance Front, which is believed to be an offshoot of the Islamist fundamentalist group Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is based in Pakistan. And the Lashkar-e-Taiba, by the way, for context, historical context, was the terror outfit responsible for the 2008 attack in Mumbai that killed more than 100 people. Now, the interesting thing about Lashkar-e-Taiba is that their relationship with the Pakistani state is a bit complicated and has been quite murky. It's been a few years since the Financial Action Task Force, which is based in Paris, had started to pressure Pakistan to stop and restrict material support for groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba. So over the years, their support from the government has declined. But the TRF specifically was formed in 2019 after Modi revoked Kashmir's special status under Article 370 of the Constitution, which caused a bit of a ruckus politically in the area, along with a lot of media blackouts, a lot of internet blackouts, and a lot of uncertainty among the population. So there's been a bit of an upsurge recently of militant activity with newer groups like the Resistance Front coming through. But what's interesting about the attack on the 22nd is that a social media handle claiming to be TRF initially came out and took responsibility for the attack, which is when I made my video on YouTube as well. But then the next day immediately, they sent out another document saying that they had nothing to do with it. And the Lashkar-e-Taiba leader also put out a video online saying that he had nothing to do with it, and the Pakistani government also declined it, which is quite unusual for a group like Lashkar-e-Taiba to deny claims. And to make matters worse, a month prior in March, there was another situation in Pakistan where a Baloch separatist group hijacked a train, and Pakistan had accused India of working with Baloch separatists to carry out the attack or fund them in some kind of way. So it's been a while since both India and Pakistan have been engaging in like a proxy war in multiple skirmishes. So that's the context that's led to the attack in Pahalgam in Kashmir. The manner in which the attack happened was also quite disturbing. the attackers asked to confirm the religious identity of the victims who were killed and asked if they were Hindu or Muslim. They shot them after they confirmed their identity. Now, a Muslim man also lost his life while he was trying to pull away one of the weapons of one of the attackers. And a Christian person also lost their life, but a majority was Hindu. The Indian government has not been able to capture the assailants. All of them have escaped as far as what I can see in the reports. But the Indian military has done what it usually does at the wake of, you know, attacks like this, which is they typically round up Kashmiris from the localities. So they have, as far as what I can tell, abducted more than 1,500 Kashmiris for questioning. And typically when this happens, people end up getting disappeared. In fact, more than 7,000 people, I believe, over the years have disappeared in this manner. So the people who really lose out the most during these skirmishes are Kashmiris, because even with the missile attacks, only two of the strikes that India launched last night struck Pakistan proper. But a majority of them struck Kashmiris in Pakistan-administered Kashmir.
That leads into my next question really well, which is, how has the attack in Kashmir fueled Hindu nationalists?
Whenever something happens in Kashmir, it always, historically, has led to flare-ups in local tensions in different parts of India. Even if the people in question are not Kashmiris, if they're just Muslims. Because the Indian population as a whole, ever since Modi got elected into office, has been primed to look the other way whenever far-right extremist groups enact violence upon random Indian Muslims. So what ended up happening right afterwards was there have been multiple reports of random Kashmiris in universities in other parts of India being expelled from their university in chief start of towns. And there's been also other reports of madrasas in places like Uttarakhand. Madrasas are Islamic schools, which have been shuttered by local governments or the local Hindu nationalist militias who operate in the area. And there was also a case of a lynching in a southern state in India of a Malayali Muslim man who was disabled, who was lynched to death by 20 people because he allegedly said Pakistan Zindabad, which is like a slogan that says long live Pakistan. And so clearly it has had a pretty violent far-right reaction across the nation. And that's on the ground level. Now, online, it's also had a massive impact in online spaces. Now, I'm not on Twitter, but I hear Twitter has been quite insane right now. But in online spaces, any calls for peace and moderation have been branded as anti-national because of the ultra-nationalist environment we're in right now. And even one of the survivors whose husband died in the attack is now being harassed by ultra-nationalist trolls, all because she called for peace and she asked people not to use the death of her husband to demonize all Muslims. So that's what's been happening online. And I've also noticed that ever since the attack, a lot of like liberal mainstream outlets and also YouTube content creators and Instagrammers where a lot of people receive the information are now speaking exactly like the Hindu nationalist outlets are. We are seeing even liberals cheering on military action and war and essentially warmongering.
You've compared what the people in Kashmir have gone through to the occupation of Palestine. Given the increased militarization, could you elaborate on this parallel?
Yes. So there are some parallels, some very important parallels to the Israeli occupation in Palestine and the way they have been able to dominate and essentially try to ethnically cleanse Gaza. But there are a few differences in the sense that when India is engaging with Pakistan is also a nuclear armed nation. Both nations here have nuclear arms. That's number one. But the second thing is the parallels to Gaza apply to the Indian occupied section of Kashmir. That is where the parallels are very stark. And I have to mention this because a lot of Pakistani military nationalists as well have been spreading a false equivalence when it comes to India and Pakistan being like Israel-Palestine. That's not the case. It's more like Indian-occupied Kashmir is like Israel and Palestine. So there's a big difference here. But the similarities come where we start seeing the patterns of settler colonial action in the region of Indian-occupied Kashmir. I'll just go through some basic history just to give you a bit of context. But in 2019, India abrogated Article 370, which was a provision in the Indian constitution, which made it so that Kashmir will have an autonomous status and they would be able to have free and fair elections and be able to run their own area. In fact, after independence, they actually had a prime minister of their own, Sheikh Abdullah, who was essentially supposed to run the place as an independent area. But the moment he also started calling an independent Kashmir, India felt like they would lose control over the region. They imprisoned Sheikh Abdullah and increased military control over the region. That's something to keep in mind. In 2019, when the Modi government revoked Article 370, they removed a lot of special provisions that were given to the Kashmiri people. A big one being how land is sold to people. So before 2019, only Kashmiris could buy land in Kashmir. But after Article 370 was removed, it opened up the Indian government's ability to sell land to permanent residents or non-Kashmiris. So there have been reports of new settlements being built that look like barracks that the Indian government is saying that will only house military camps. But there's been reports that there's essentially settlements large enough to bring in multiple families of the military as well. So that's something that's been quite alarming for a lot of people who are reporting from the area. So that's one main thing. The other thing is it also opens up the region for more corporations to come in to mine resources. A good example of this was in 2023 when India announced that Kashmir held 5.9 million metric tons of lithium. And they have been trying to auction it out ever since. Some Indian media outlets like Business Standard reported that companies like Mitsubishi, Tesla, Ola Electric have shown interest in the lithium deposits. So that's another angle. And the fact that there's 700,000 military personnel, different regiments from the CRPF to the Border Security Forces, the BSF, in the region is also another indication that they've been trying to increase militarization in the area and enact a form of demographic change as well, with all these changes coming through. This attempt at demographic change in the area is not a new one. In fact, you look at the regional politics of Jammu and Kashmir, you'll notice in the electoral politics that the region of Jammu is majority Hindu, and the BJP, the far-right nationalist party, is in power there as well. So the government has had a very long plan to enact this Hindu nationalist vision of India, where they need all states of the nation to have a Hindu majority. And because Kashmir has historically had a Muslim majority, they have been trying all kinds of methods to change that and enact some sort of demographic change.
Given this historical context, how concerned should we be about the military escalation, and what does this escalation mean for the people living in Kashmir?
The military escalation right now has a different character than the ones that have happened before. And a recent example is in 2019, when an Indian Air Force pilot tried to bomb a few targets in Pakistan. He missed and he didn't shoot down any targets, and the plane was shot down. He luckily survived, and the Pakistani military actually arrested him, did not detain him for that long. He was returned to India as an act of de-escalation. So that's what happened in 2019. However, this time, the Indian military has successfully targeted civilian infrastructure that they claim are terrorist infrastructure, and there have been reports that have come out that say that they have actually killed multiple civilians. So the character of this exchange is much different than what's happened in the last few decades. So there's a very real threat of more escalation, especially when you look at the mainstream of both countries not calling for any sort of de-escalation right now, that there's more of a mood for war. And one of the more disturbing things that we've noticed is no one on the mainstreams on both sides are talking about the people who are receiving the brunt of this violence, which is the Kashmiri people. So the only way this can be solved is if the Kashmiri question is solved, if Kashmiri people can actually have a voice in their autonomy. So that's the only way out of this, because more violence from both sides, and especially the far-right Hindu government on one side and the military dictatorship of Pakistan on the other side, this is just going to breed more violence and keep escalating.
That was video essayist Rohan Davis on the political context surrounding rapidly escalating tensions between India and Pakistan over the contested Kashmir region and the impact of this on Kashmiris.
International Desk on 95 BFM.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.